Most dissidents, though, were neither Marxists nor neo-Slavophiles. They were essentially liberals. They were essentially Democrats and fundamentally reformist. They didn't, in fact, even propose, at least for now, destroying communism in Russia. What they wanted was for the Soviet Union to live up to its own official liberal, democratic, humanistic claims and even laws. They demanded real civil rights, real personal liberties, respect for the individual, respect for individual dignity and rights. And the leading proponent of this point of view, the most important public voice, was the famous physicist Andrei Sakharov. Now these are important, these ideological distinctions, these issues about denied group rights, but really these are just superficials for understanding this movement. They don't really explain what motivated dissenters, what inspired them to actually put their personal freedom, even their personal lives, at risk, what made members of different groups, however different about issue and ideology, cooperate, talk together, even in many cases become close friends. And there's a lot of answers to this question of more deeply what inspired people to become dissidents in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. One of these was certainly a key motivating ideal shared by all of them. The idea of human rights, of the rights of man. In other words, the old intelligentsia ideal of the dignity and rights of a human being as a human being. They all shared this. This was for all of them an inspiration, as it had been for the intelligentsia as far back as the late 18th and early 19th century. No less important, though, was something still more subtle. Though I should say that in speaking of this, I'm speaking not just as a historian of Soviet and Russian history, but also from my own personal experiences living in the Soviet Union in the 1980s as a student and scholar. It seems to me that one of the things that most distinguished dissidents was an inexplicable inner drive, a sort of personal drive, a moral drive to what they would describe as living for truth above all else. Judging the world, judging their own lives, judging the society in which they lived, not on the basis of convenience or habit, what's made life easiest for them, but according to absolute universal principles, according to morality, one may say, rooted in the nature of human beings, the nature of what they thought was true everywhere. A good friend of mine who participated in this movement in the late 1960s described this determination to me with the following words. One day he said, "We simply decided to live as if we were free, to no longer live a lie." In other words, to say openly what many people were thinking and feeling was true. Of course, in reality, these dissidents were not truly free, even if they tried to pretend they were, as an act of rebellion. For their brazen defiance, the government acted to silence them in all sorts of different ways. They were called in for what were called chats with a local KGB agent or the state prosecutor, extremely intimidating conversations. They might lose their job. They would lose the right to publish if they were a writer or an intellectual. They might suffer arrest. They may be sent to the gulag, imprisoned, sent to camps. Some, indeed many of them, were sentenced to a mental institution. How could one be so insane as to continue to challenge a system when one knew that one would be punished for it? As you might recognize, in all of these things, this dissident movement had much in common with earlier generations of the Russian intelligentsia, with Novikov and the Decembrists and Belinsky and Herzen and others that I've been talking about. In fact, it may be most useful to think of these dissidents of the 60s and 70s and 80s as intelligenti, in the full richness of this term in the Russian context. People living for principles, principles rooted in the nature of the human being, and being willing to stand up with a moral critique of the status quo in the name of principles. One final word about all this is in order. Although Western observers noticed all these developments, indeed so did many Soviet scholars, this everyday dissidence, which was noticed, few of them spoke of it as a sign of a systemic crisis in the Soviet Union. People saw this, they didn't understand, or see that this was leading to some deep fundamental crisis challenging the system. Some Russians, however, did, in particular sociologists and psychologists, but even some Soviet leaders. And one of these leaders who recognized that all of this was leading to a fundamental crisis that had to be addressed was Mikhail Gorbachev, who became party leader in 1985. Soon after he came to power, he began speaking openly about what he and others had been observing for some time, that much of the population had become visibly alienated and disenchanted from the established order. That the Soviet Union, in other words, faced, in his own words, nothing less than what he called a spiritual crisis. In Russian, a duchovny krisis. Literally, or more figuratively and deeper, it may be translated as a cultural crisis. This sense of a spiritual crisis meant a crisis about values, about beliefs, about judgments, about tastes. Gorbachev's attempt to resolve this deep spiritual crisis, coupled with a growing economic crisis that I've already described, is the subject of my next and final lecture.